The following broadcast of Talk Shop was recorded for broadcast at this time. Good morning. Today is Wednesday, the 21st of February. Joining us this morning, the gang from Fish, I guess is the way to say it, the gang from Fish Drilling and Pump. Good morning, folks.
Morning.
Morning.
All right. So we've got Stacy and Andrew and David here from Fish, and they think that they're going to be able to wrestle down this question. We'll see. All right. Here we go. Why were executions held at sunrise?
Ooh.
Oh, that's a good one. My brain's blank. It's a typical early morning.
Less dilated pupils from the dead?
I was thinking so it wouldn't screw up the rest of your day.
Yeah, more time to clean it up.
Yeah.
That's true.
All right, good. Okay, well, we've got the attitude rolling now. In prehistoric times, executions of condemned persons were carried out as sacrificial ceremonies to the rising sun. In the Middle Ages, because the executions were public, they continued to be held early in the day so as not to attract huge crowds. It wasn't until well into the 20th century that the more enlightened societies brought capital punishment indoors, not because executions were shocking, but because they were proving to be too popular. And you see some of those old things, right, from the Middle Ages and the crowds and kids, and it became a big festival.
Yeah.
I like your answer about cleaning, though.
Yeah.
I like to get yeah. We got to start the day off clean.
Yeah. Right? Jeez. Oh. Let's talk a little bit about water in general for our area. Do we have good water?
Some places, some places are obviously worse than others, like low-lying valleys, tend to have more minerals in their water than, mountain water, where you would drill like deep holes. Sometimes that water's a little bit more, more palatable. We'll say.
Oh, I thought you were going to say agriculturally influenced.
Well, that too.
Down in the valley, yes. Oh, spring water. Yeah, that's a phrase that gets thrown around an awful lot. Is there, I know it sounds stupid, but is there a technical definition of spring water?
Technical definition, I guess it's kind of vague because, a lot of people call springs different things. It could be just a seep out of the ground, or it could be, like a pool that, just pools on top of the ground,
I was thinking, we have this thing called organic. It's really pretty nebulous. Okay. Spring water, and Hawaiian spring water, and you pay through the Fiji water?
Yeah, Fiji water.
And you look at it and go, okay, it's water. Okay. So I was curious if spring water had any kind of a technical, or there's a standard to it, for the bottling folks, or not.
For the bottling folks, they still have to run their testing on the water and all that stuff. For regular people that have springs on their property, it's, a lot of people say that the spring water is always better,
It's because they paid for it.
Yeah.
Well, and around here also, springs, sometimes you imagine beautiful springs, but sometimes springs could just mean it's coming up on its own out of the water and making a puddle. So it's not always as glamorous as it right. sounds.
Seepage. Yeah. That really sounds dandy, doesn't it?
I wouldn't want to put it in a bottle.
No. Are there regulatory standards that are in place that wells need to adhere to or abide by in order to be, certified, to be used by people?
Oh, yeah. There's, there's the international well standards that every state adopts some sort of standard. Obviously, we're in California, so we have our own standard. And then each county dictates how their well construction standard is to be done. And so in our line of work, every county that we go to drill a new well in, we must adhere to that county's specific strict guidelines to construct the well to make it permitted. And so,
is there a lot of variance, Andy, between, is Humboldt that different than Del Norte or Trinity?
Not really. There are some counties that are more stringent on well seals, for example, than other counties as far as well seals are concerned. Well seals are just sealing off different depths of the aquifer to alleviate contamination or cross-contamination or things like that. So every county has their own standard, but generally speaking, there's the state standard, which is the bare minimum, that a lot of counties still follow that same guideline. So
you say state of California and bare minimum. Normally those two aren't connected.
Right.
California being a little bit more strident. Do you guys go over the state line?
No.
Okay. Is there like, not certification, but
licenses,
licensing,
yeah, licensing. State
specific stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we've got seepage and we've got wells and we've got springs. How deep are some of the wells in the area? I mean, you hear some of these stories about kids falling in wells.
Right.
And okay, they're 20 feet down. I'm thinking, okay, 20 feet, that's like a ladder or a long rope.
Well, they really vary. Some wells are shallow wells, 40 feet. Some are deeper wells, 3 to 400 feet. And
do those get encased in something so that... Yeah, rocks don't fall in it and things like
that? Yeah, generally there's a pipe that goes all the way down to the bottom. It is well casing. And
okay, so similar to a chimney.
Yeah, kind of.
With the
yeah
the pipes. Okay.
But the difference is with the water wells, the type of casing. So there's two different types of casing that, you know, Andy can better explain how that works.
So we typically...
Spotlight.
We typically, you know... There's steel well casing and also plastic well casing, PVC. And the PVC is not what you'd think as a typical, you know, cheap plastic. It's actually designed for well casing from a manufacturer that we purchased from.
So it's the thicker, kind of like what
yes,
the services
exactly.
districts use
yes,
when they underground?
Yes, higher tensile strength per square foot, things like that. The steel obviously is steel, but it's the steel quality that we use is higher grade quality steel, so it lasts longer than, say, steel from the 1950s. Those are the two most common types. There are stainless steel options as well, but obviously everybody knows stainless steel is more expensive than standard mild steel. So,
do they rust?
Steel can rust, yeah, of course.
Well, yeah, I mean, but I was just thinking, because it's in water all the time.
Yeah.
If
it does.
It allows it to yeah. rust or gives it extended life.
Some aquifers speed up the rusting iron process, that rusting phase, and then some aquifers have very little effect. David and I go out into the mountains like he was talking earlier, and some wells are just as clean and pristine as the day that we drilled them, and then other wells are, you know, they look like they've aged 30 years within 10 years, so... There's
well,
a
I
lot
know which
of...
one I would end up having. KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about Chicken of the Sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets. More than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
The following broadcast of Talk Shop was recorded for broadcast at this time. Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with David, Stacy, and Andy from Fish Drilling and Well and Drilling, Drill Well and Pump. Throw enough words out, eventually they're all there.
We do all those things.
Yeah. The motors or the engine or whatever it is that pulls up the water, we hear sometimes about gravity fed. And for me, one of the amazing things of the Roman Empire was their aquifers and aqueducts and their whole system of moving water. And you see those huge architectural things. I sense you guys aren't masons. So how do we get water up out of a well? Is it just the gravity, natural pressures, or are there pumps involved? How do you guys determine that one?
So generally, when we get information for a water source well, we know how many gallons per minute a well will produce. Well, you do like test pumps on it. So you'll throw like a pump in there, and then we'll pump it out. We'll put it through a set of tests for, you know, gallons per minute over time. And
so
then
you'll drill the hole and then start to figure things out.
Yeah, and then we kind of start to figure, you know, what that well produces over time. And then we design and build a system that says, okay, your well does 10 gallons a minute. You know, you need to have this type of equipment to be able to run a whole household on a 10-gallon a minute well. Or, you know,
are is that a lot?
It's pretty decent amount.
Okay.
I mean, it's more water than you're going to go through in a day for most residential.
That's kind of the standard we all look for.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we use pumps to pump it to tanks. We have some people that like to pump up to the top of the hill and have gravity. So when power goes out, they have gravity-fed, you know, water systems. We have some that have generator backups that, you know, will, if the power goes out, they still have water because they have generators and stuff like that.
And the automatic switch.
And the automatic switch, yes. Yeah. And, you know, we determine, you know, what do they want to use the water for? Is it only for household, or are they going to have a mom and pop garden in the back, or is it going to be, you know, huge, you know, agricultural, you know, use? You know, we look at what they want and say, okay, well, do we need to put larger casing in to get more water in? Or is your standard 5-inch casing good enough? You know, so we really...
That would determine the size of the hole, though.
Yeah.
The shaft, I guess.
Yeah. Wouldn't yeah.
It? Okay.
So it generally in areas like in Ferndale, if you're looking for, you know, more water for, you know, aggregating over the field, you want to put in a larger casing so that you can accommodate, you know, larger flow and also a larger pump.
Better to have one large or two small?
Well, it's better to have one large, I would say, because if you have two small, then you have double pumps and more electricity costs. But you
have redundancy then, too.
Yeah.
Being a fan of redundancies.
Right.
If it's affordable.
Yeah, it's an expensive redundancy.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. Is there a lot of variability in the pumps and mechanicals?
Pumps.
Of a well also, you know, most of us, we have this folklore nostalgia thing, you know, in the city square, there's the well, and you drop the water bucket down and you pull it up, and then which unfortunately I know still exists in a lot of parts of the world. But here, do you have a lot of variables, or here's the pump and this will do the trick, and you don't worry too much about manufacturers or some of the nuances that we do with other appliances?
We have manufacturers that we like to deal with, you know, one for, you know, the ease of use and their longevity as far as, you know, what they can, what their output is over a long period of time. Some are built better than others.
Shock.
And we really, you know, some areas that have high mineral content, we want to make sure we try to do, you know, stainless steel impellers rather than plastic impellers in the pump. So that way we know they're going to last a little bit longer and not be affected by what's in the ground.
Are there filters that are used?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Different sizes, different materials, based on what the interest is, you know, what the utilization of it is. I mean, I'm seeing a matrix. It's like the old Sears catalog is what's in my head right now.
Pretty much.
Yes.
Oh, it is that.
That's
correct. That level. Okay.
For every aspect, including the pumps, there's so many different options that finding the right one. He makes it sound so easy, but. You know, it's a lot harder to find the right pump that you need for a system, and it's a lot harder to find the right treatment that you need. You know, it's not just one size fits all. So
it's kind of like a pool with the treatment stuff. Is there an analogy that's there?
Kind of. We generally do testing on the water, you know, like a household test, and that tells us mineral contents, hardness, you know, pH.
Safety.
And then we do bacterial testing as well that tells us if there is bacteria, how much bacteria is in there.
So that I know this really, I didn't do well in science. bacteria occurs naturally in water.
Some of it does.
But for those that are not surface water, is there still bacteria that's
We there? See it every once in a while. You know, a lot of times bacteria is, we'll see, like if you have a well that is older and it's in a pasture, obviously you're going to see some, you know, influence over time. Don't really see too much of the natural bacteria in the ground that, you know, deep wells. It's mostly in shallow wells. But, you know,
old construction techniques really play a factor in that. Like I was talking earlier about well seals and standards from back then were not adhered to because there was no common practice back then. And now there's a standard, so that standard's being met. So a lot of the newer construction wells don't have as much of a problem.
Or they never had sanitary seals put on them.
Yes.
Are those retrofittable? Or is it because it tends to be the end of the segment? Okay, fine. We'll continue when we come back. It's 8:30.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
Live. Real Red Meat Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
The following broadcast of Talk Shop was recorded for broadcast at this time. Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:34. We're back talking shop. No secrets in here, people. There are microphones. Before the break, we were talking, Andy, a little bit about retrofitting some of the older wells. I mean, if somebody's had a well that's been functioning and it still functions, but you guys come in and you do a little sample, you go, there's a reason why the things aren't working out as well. Okay, fine. Is it oftentimes is retrofitting an option, or does it
in the sense of eliminating bacterial, you know, contaminations and E. coli and things like that? Once those items are in there, you'll never get rid of them. But as far as putting a new well seal on some wells, yes, can be retrofitted to have a sanitary well seal placed upon them.
More of like just a routine maintenance?
It's a matter of getting down to a 20-foot zone around the well casing. So you'd have to excavate that whole outer casing down.
Oh, around the outside of it. Yes. Oh, that's got to be a tricky piece of gear you guys have.
I think we're one
of the few that has the ability to do that. So, it is kind of unique.
Yeah. It's a very involved process. There are things that can go wrong with doing it that way. So we only recommend that in extreme cases where it's the only last-ditch effort, basically, to have
cases.
It retrofitted.
I got that one.
But sometimes the state requires them, because if you're trying to use your well for like a planned project and it's not a permitted well and it doesn't have the appropriate steel, that will be required that you put one in. And
So there's no grandfathering?
No. They do still make you adhere to the rules. So, you know, we'll get those calls every once in a while. And, you know, I think a lot of people feel like if they don't have it, it's too late. But, I mean, we're able to make it happen. And you know, it's not easy. But
like I said, certain wells you can do that too. And then some you can't. You just have to drill a new well
right.
at that point. So,
Is it easy to find water? I would think that there's a science and an art to that.
There is definitely a science to it. In our business, we use geology as a sign and experience. So we know by historical data is what I tell my customers when I meet with them is this region is good over here. This region is not so good. These geologic markers in the mountain range and how it was pushed up from millions of years ago looks good. This section over here does not.
So you don't use like LIDAR or something like that?
No, we don't use any of that. We've found with some of the black box technology, that stuff can give
I like false that phrase. Readings. That's cool. Black box, it makes it sound like magic.
Yeah, sometimes it is magic with those things. They can give false readings where it'll show a water source, quote unquote, but in reality, that same gives that same signature as a non-permeable clay layer.
They'll
bounce off very similar
really?
Markers.
Water
yes.
and clay or
they'll give
show
the
same on this?
They'll give the same markers a lot of times that we've found because we've drilled holes like that have used that technology. And sure enough, you drill where they say there's water and you hit this strange clay layer or something that looks and mimics water on the radar, but it's not water.
So it's almost identifying an anomaly.
Yes.
Rather than necessarily what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, that's got to be wildly frustrating.
Well, yeah, that and, you know, we have customers who use witchers, you know, and a customer's...
I don't want to say do those people work, but are those reliable?
They're as accurate as we are, I think, is probably the best answer for that, you know.
Really?
And...
They're that...
I think the hardest thing is whenever somebody says, my witcher says right here, and you don't find it, they want to blame you, but you also don't want to, you know, drill to 500 feet when you know it's not there, you know, because the witcher's not paying for it, the customer is.
Right.
So we, you know, it's always kind of hard when, you know, they use outside sources, but they're not always as accurate as people would think.
I was right up there with Witch Doctor for me, so the fact that they even exist is an intriguing concept.
David and I over the years have dealt with dowsers or witchers in the past, and like Stacy was saying, it's a lot of science and using historical data, even with witchers too, because successful witchers are not going to go into an area blind. They'll use their expertise, of course, but they'll probably do their research as well, just like...
So they're doing their experience and research and putting
everything
together.
Yes, they probably have their own portfolio that has like areas that have been successful for them in the past. So there is, you know, that
part
of their business.
It's kind of like with a brain surgeon. You don't want to be the first.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. God, you can use that one down the road. So when the wells are dug, is it like... those fence post augers, the automatic ones, and just kind of goes down, and except obviously it's a little bit larger than that and a little bit more elaborate, but is that what people would see when a well gets dug? What does that look like?
Kind of, not really. So it's you know, we have special bits and tooling that, you know, that make our job easier as far as, you know, drilling holes, as you know, if there's clays or sands or solid rock or anything like that. Normal post hole diggers are what we would call an auger, and we don't really use that, you know. And so they're special tungsten carbide bits that we use, and we have hammer bits, trichome bits, and it's a big piece of machinery. It's a big semi truck that does the drilling.
Something that could go down further than 2 feet would have to be something of that magnitude. Yeah.
Yeah, it can go down a couple thousand feet if it's tooled right.
Are there any wells in Humboldt County that are that you had to go down that far?
I would think you'd
probably want to just try another spot rather than go down that deep.
Some of the deepest wells around here that I know of are about 600 feet.
Okay. And when an earthquake happens, you know, we hear a well has run dry. Well, okay, maybe it's run dry, or maybe it's kind of, you know, the water table has shifted a little bit. Does that impact a lot of the wells in the area? If there's a, I don't know, say a 6, and let's put it in Ferndale because most of them seem to be there. Does that mess things up? Do you guys get a lot of calls all of a sudden from people who have wells and say, hey, I don't know what happened, but no water?
Yeah, we do. We get some steel wells, you know, after a big earth shaker, they'll snap or they'll what we call
really,
shear.
They'll shear off?
They'll shear in the ground because the weak points are always the weld when you weld them together. And so it'll shear, and sometimes it'll break in, you know, like a vertical strip will break, and then you'll get a lot of sand start to come in the well. So we've had pumps where they get stuck. You just can't get them out because the sand just falls on top of it. And it's like
a cave-in.
Like a finger trap trying to pull the pump out.
I hated those things.
Really. Yeah. And, you know, we do see a lot of them. We notice that PVC wells tend to bode better with the earthquakes because they do flex a lot better. When it comes to fixing or repairing a well that's been sheared, you kind of really can't do anything about it.
You start new.
You have to start over again.
Yeah.
We do get a lot of calls after earthquakes, though, for people concerned about their wells. But sometimes
they just want to test to make sure that everything's
well,
okay.
Well, usually, you know, their production will go down. So it could be that the perforations have silted in from the shift underground. Or it could be that their treatment filters are clogged from the additional sediment that was shaken loose.
Oh, just simple clogged filters.
We love those ones.
Oh, I bet they do too.
Yes, we love it when it's just a filter. But we do notice that for a couple months after earthquakes, that people do have to change their filters a little bit more often because it's pulling up all that stuff that was shaken out.
You guys ready? Turbidity. In the water. I remember Art Boley talking about turbidity a long time ago. I just thought it was gunk in the water. No, it's turbidity. Okay. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:44.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with folks from Fish Drilling and Pump. See, I got it right.
Nailed
once.
It.
Stacy, David, and Andy. Hard water, soft water. Okay. Is that just pure mineral content in the water or a percentage that causes water to be soft or water to be hard?
So hard water is made up of minerals, yes. There's calcium, iron, manganese, dissolved solids are in that, which are going to make it hard.
But they also add taste, don't they?
A little bit, yeah. So okay. With minerals comes taste. You know, if you have high iron, you kind of get that metallic taste in your mouth.
Salt, duh. Yeah. Okay.
salt is really used.
Not in the water, in cooking and baking, yeah. Salt adds water, salt's yeah. a... Mineral, okay.
Yeah. So, some people like soft water. Some people like hard water. Some people like an in-between of both. So they don't like it completely soft, and they don't like it really hard. So we really go to the customer and say, hey, what's wrong with your water? Is it too hard? Because we have some water softeners that don't take out all the hardness out of the water. And we do have some that do take all the hardness out.
So different types of filters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And filters aren't as, the water softeners aren't as slimy as everybody remembers from the olden days.
Yeah, what was that? With the polyester resin.
Slimy.
Most people call them slimy, but they're not slimy. Not the ones that we use. You don't notice the difference.
What percentage of Humboldt County are on wells? Any idea?
I would say it's probably at least half.
Yeah, at least half.
Well, if you think about spitballing here, I think every municipality is on some sort of well.
That's
so
true.
If you think about it that way, it's everybody.
Everybody.
Yeah, we do a lot of community.
Okay, guys.
Water too.
With
private, difficult, private wells.
Private wells.
5%, 10%?
Oh, higher.
No, it's a
Much
lot.
Much higher.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
We drive all over the place, and it's there's a lot.
So if you live in a community that's a municipality and you're paying a water bill, then obviously you're on their city water, right?
On their
But if you're not paying for that service, then you have to be on some sort of spring or well to get your water.
Are there any grandfathered ones, I'm thinking like Cutton. Okay, in the old days, there was no water out there. You know, there was just wells, or I guess maybe pulling it off whatever they could get water from.
We do come across some properties that, from time to time, that have old wells on their parcels. And it's interesting to come across those because some of them are very old hand-dug wells that are unbeknownst to the customer and
historical almost.
Yeah, yeah.
I had one that he was pulling up a deck and he found a stone-lined well underneath of his deck that he had no idea was there.
Oh, cool.
We've definitely had within city limit well service calls before, yep. So yes. There are some.
That's got to be... Just from a historical perspective, that's got to be cool.
Yeah,
to see that stuff because you know there's a story around it and what was here originally and that kind of stuff.
And I would say most people outside of the major districts have some sort of well or water source on their property. You know, just even right out here in Bayside.
Well, I was saying like Freshwater Neyland.
Yeah, yeah. You
know, like those folks.
They all have their own private wells, unless they have small districts like Lolita or sure. Like Garberville and stuff, you know, they have smaller districts that kind of branch out.
What's the biggest surprise if somebody is buying a home that's on a well?
Oh, usually
maintenance.
Yeah, maintenance. Right? I think it's just like anything when you're buying a house, you know, you're going to want to make sure that it's functioning properly.
Upkeep and on their maintenance.
Not everybody maintains things and takes care of their things as well as you would like. So we
definitely like ferns growing in the roof gutters.
Yeah.
As an example.
Yeah. We come across some pretty neglected water systems when it comes to real estate inspections that we do, but
just ignorance.
It could be that. Could just be, you know, if it works, why mess with it?
Well, and a lot of people that move from, let's say, Eureka.
Make it more exciting. They moving in from LA.
Yeah. Or LA. Any municipality, you know, as they use that water, they think, okay, yeah, turn the tap on, life's good. They don't really have to think about where their water comes from. Whenever they buy a piece of land that has a well, you know, I think it takes a little bit of time for them to realize where that source comes from and, oh, hey, I should probably change the filters out once a year or
test it and make sure
it's yeah, good. Let's make sure that it's safe and everybody's not gonna get sick.
Yeah.
Cool. Thanks for coming in, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Appreciate the time.
Yes.
See everybody tomorrow. This presentation of Talk Shop was recorded at a previous time for playback today.